What's up, family? Welcome to another episode of Ray Bridging Humans. It's the place where the people get to hear you and the world get to see it. We back for another episode, y'all. I'm really excited about this episode. Got my guy, Melvin Guy, on. Yeah. We're going to talk about some good stuff. So I'm glad y'all came back for another episode. We're looking forward to a whole lot more. Yeah, we're finna get into this conversation. This is another brother conversation. Now, this guy I got here today, my homie, my partner, we have a wide range of conversation at the barbershop. we talk about everything, and we're never short of words, man. And I was trying to think about the perfect episode to bring him on and something to talk about. I mean, he can talk about a range of things. He's a father. He's a husband. He's a realtor. He's just a great all-around guy. And I wanted to bring him on to just have a conversation with the guys, with the bros, man. So welcome my guest, Melvin Guy.
Man, I appreciate it. Man, happy to be here, man. I think, like we were saying, man, seeing the journey, it's been amazing. And you're doing great, man. It's a great thing, man. I love being here.
Yeah, I thought you was continuing to talk. Said you love me. I pull your mic closer to you because I couldn't hear you. Yeah, pull it closer to you. Yeah, man. Okay, talking.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you good. It's probably better. That's better. Yeah, man. Glad you're here, man. Glad we're here to talk, man. And we had a session yesterday with the kids, man, with helping inspire men, bro. And it was like real intense. It was real vulnerable. I think it was one of the most vulnerable sessions. And we talked about confidence and self-esteem, man. And today, I think this episode will probably be one of the vulnerable sessions for men. Just me thinking about what we're talking about, what the episode is about, man. Breaking the silence, why men struggle to ask for help. Yeah. That's such a vulnerable place, you know, and just thinking about me and throughout my life and my journey, being willing to ask for help and being a man, a black man in particular. And I think this spans across the scope of manhood altogether, but particularly black men with a lot of the struggles that we have with our lived experiences, man. It's a little tougher. Mm-hmm. I would argue for us with the lack of resources, with the lack of the different things that we have in the community. It's a tough subject. So we're going to break the silence on some stuff, man. Yeah. We're going to break the silence on some stuff, man. And with my journey, man, of podcasting, man, not just podcasting, but life coaching, I go through a lot of stats, man. You know, if you go through stats, man, stats will really make you depressed, man. Like, it'd be like, man, what? Like, like it's so many stats. But I want to kind of go through a few before I even get to the interview, man. Just kind of go through a few with you as well as the guests and the audience, man. Going through some stats, man. The American Psychological Association says 26% of black men do not seek mental health treatment. Well, seek mental health treatment. Versus 40% of white men. The Journal of Black Psychology found that black men are 40% less likely to ask for help than women. The National Alliance on Mental Health said 63% of blacks consider a health or medical condition to be weak. Mm. And looking at those stats, man, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I know we have a lot of socioeconomic barriers, man, that we face with unemployment, poverty, we face with incarceration, man. There's so many things when I think about the brothers. In particular, you know, when at the shop, man, a lot of the guys who come to the shop are formerly incarcerated men. You know, my brother Lau, he's there, and a lot of his clients, some of my clients as well, formerly incarcerated men. So when they see a lot that's going on now and a lot that's going on in our community, I think it's a level of apathy, if you will, with the lack of resources, with the lack of help. So men like, shit, man, fuck that shit, bro.
Right.
I ain't
right.
really messing with it, man.
Right.
So yeah, man. Just let me hear your thoughts on that, man. What do you think about these stats, bro?
I mean, the sad part is it doesn't feel so shocking sometimes to hear it. Yeah. You know? I think to your point, man, I think a lot of us were raised, as far as in, you know, our Black community, to kind of shy away from it, right? It's either pray about it, suck it up. You know, those things then make it feel as if you are asking for help in some kind of way, or if you are seeking help from like therapy or something like that, then something's wrong with you. The sad part is that, you know, it's more people dealing with the same thing.
Same thing, bro.
But you feel like you're on an island if you go seek help.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Right. And that's so true. And I think something you said, I think we've reached a point in history and time where we're starting to see just praying about it and just like going to God. I mean, which is great. Don't get me wrong. We're believers. You know what I'm saying? We go to God for prayer. That's important. However, we're seeing that, man, over time, that's not the whole all tell all solution, man, because we need help. You know, we really need help. And just thinking from a male point of view, you know, I thought about Melvin when moments when I need help, you know, thinking about it, making it personal. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about, man, Raymond, when you need help, what do you feel? What emotions come up? And the emotion come up for me is, you know, weak, less than, or it's an embarrassment if I need some help with something. And so if I've needed some help with something, I'm doing better now.
Yeah,
I can tell you, man, I'm doing better now with being able to ask for help. Or even like it's been moments and times when you've came to the shop, you know, this guy, he's somebody who I could talk to this guy, man. And I've shared things with you about me personally, man, just, you know, because I'm reaching out, you know what I'm saying? And it gets to a place with us, man. We will reach out. If we feel safe, we will reach out, man. So, but yeah, how do you manage and navigate needing help, bro?
You know, it's funny. It's taking time, you know what I mean, to kind of really work myself up to a point to where it's like, okay, like, I need to ask somebody. I think a lot of times I internalize things, you know, try to problem solve in my mind.
Yeah.
And then, you know, while doing that, I get overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. Then once I get overwhelmed, then anxiety sets in.
Yes.
And then, man, I'm in a and then I'm in a place where it's just kind of like I'm drowning. You know what I mean? And so, you know, I've now gotten to a point to where I've started to recognize, like, those moments where it's like, okay, I need to say something out loud to somebody else.
Yeah.
And so it may even be at the shop, you know what I mean?
Like, hey Raymond,
I'm trying to get this Mississippi license and trying to figure some things out. And, you know, hey, like, when you got yours, what did you do? Or, hey, like, you know, when you dealing with this type of situation, what you know, how did you go about it? And then, man, probably, I would say maybe around pandemic time, maybe a year or two after, man, I really like sought, like, you know, a therapist. Like, it was time to sit down with somebody. You know, I mean, in full transparency, I think anxiety is something that I struggle with from time to time, and I think you know, I've always kind of put it off as just kind of like worrying. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just worried about this, you know? And then it had started to get to a point to where it was like, I'm feeling some feelings that I don't think I've felt before. You know what I mean? And I was like, I need to talk to somebody. And so, reached out to a therapist, man. And, you know, I at one point I was trying, you know, being a little bit more consistent, and then kind of step back. And then every now and again, like, hey, you got any openings?
you know what I mean?
And go back to it. And I think I had to, honestly, I had to get past that mental block of thinking that I could do it all myself in my mind. You know what I mean? And kind of step into that place where it's like, it's okay to ask for help, just based off the fact that, one, your mind doesn't have all the answers.
Right. and we feel like we do. Like, we feel like, man, I got the answer. And I think one thing you just said, man, internalizing it.
And
when we internalize, bro, I think we got like an invisible cup that's filling all the way up, and that mug is overflowing at some point, you know. And we start to, you know, self-hate. We start to really getting off into things that that we should have asked for help for. But when we internalize, we don't say anything. Mm-hmm. We don't talk to nobody. Even spouses, we don't even say it because we want to appear that, man, we got it.
Yep.
We got it, man. And so, yeah, man. So that's heavy, man. But just getting off into the conversation, man. In your experience, man, with cultural expectations, how have that shaped your idea? Or do you think that it shaped the idea that Black men have to be self-reliant?
Yeah. I like, so my experience, I guess just giving a little background. So, I'm from Little Rock, Arkansas. Moved here to go to University of Memphis, never left. But growing up, you know, my parents were divorced, but I had very good parents. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's like my dad lived in Memphis, actually, growing up. We stayed in Little Rock. But just kind of my experience with it was one that I have an older sister. Uh-huh. And so for a little bit, it was just me, my mom, and her. Okay. And so my sister's 4 years older than me. And so, she was encountering things as like a teenager and things like that before I got to them. Mm-hmm. And so I could see my mom dealing with her issues. Okay. And so as the boy and the younger one, I was trying to stay out the way.
Yeah, try to stay out the way. Right.
So certain things, you know, I started to try to become self-reliant on, right? Mm-hmm. Or either kind of shielding certain things from my mom and them or how I was feeling. And just because I didn't want to be a burden, right? Like I didn't want to add to any level of like parenting that you were already doing for me, because you're doing a great job. Right, like, right, you know what I mean?
Right.
And then, you know, in the same situation, like with my dad, it was kind of one of those things where, you know, he wasn't there every day, but he was still an active dad. You know what I mean? But the way he was raised, rural Arkansas, same thing with my mom, but rural Arkansas, you know, it was when you 18. You go do your thing, you find a job, you work hard, you take care of yourself. And so I think his mentality, and not even in a bad way, was just this kind of like, you a boy, you know what I mean? He's getting ready to be a man. You need to figure this out. You need to do it. Like, I remember I think I was 15, and I used to come stay with him in the summers, or I stay with him during like the holidays and things like that. And so he was like, if I get up and go to work every day, you get up and go to work every day, because you need to start learning how to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And so he took me up to Super Kmart on Austin Peay.
Wow, Super Kmart.
Told me to dress nice. He was like, dress nice. You're going to fill out an application. Based on what they need, they probably might interview you right then and there. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to take you in here, go fill out the application. If they interview you there, be ready. You're going to start working. And it was just kind of the way it was. And so even past that, you know, once I got here to University of Memphis, he was in town, but oftentimes he would put it back on me. So then that in my mind, it's just kind of been like, you know, you got to figure it out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just, you got to be self-reliant. And then I think culturally, or even just kind of society wise, you know, I think Black guys, man, we do a lot of talking about grinding, mm-hmm. hustling, getting it out the mud, things like that, to where I think subconsciously we feel like that's the route we have to go in order to see success, or your success is fake if you're not self-reliant.
Yeah.
Get what I'm saying? In some kind of way, where it's like, if you hadn't struggled, or you done it alone, then if you ain't self-made, then who are you really?
Who are you? Right, right.
You know what I mean?
And it's so much in that. And you said something, man, and it's still ringing in my head. You said, you a boy. You know, that's such a complete sentence.
Man.
It's so much in that. You know what I'm saying? And to your point also, you know, with us grinding and reaching, like, we always got to be, like, going and going. And so a lot of times I think we don't leave room for error. Mm-hmm. We don't leave room for when error happens. Like, how do we process that error? You know what I'm saying? And and a lot of times, most of the time, shit, we're going to go to something toxic, you know?
Right.
If you're a drinker, you're going to drink. If you're a smoker, you're going to smoke. If you are a sex addict, you're going to sex. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You're going to go to something that, like, man, I probably shouldn't even be doing this. Or not even just those tangible things, but but brothers, like where do you go when you don't meet the mark? You know what I'm saying? And that's something that I don't think we leave enough room for, man.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like those moments when we're not meeting the mark. Those moments when, you know, if I don't really understand, but because I'm the head of my household, because I got kids, you know, and I tell brothers all the time, Evan, I've told you, you know, a lot of times when you're a man and when you're taking care of your stuff, man, most of the people that you're responsible for, they love you. They don't mean any harm, but they just want to make sure it happens. They look at you because you got to make it happen.
Right.
You know, you got to make that thing happen. So,
right.
Wow, man. Yes. Yeah. And just even with you growing up with a dad and having a father, man, I can only imagine what that pressure, you know, feel like. It's like an unspoken thing.
Right.
Yeah, it's unspoken. Right. It's like, I give you what you need, you go, and you go get it.
Yeah, yeah. And, it, you know, it's crazy because, so, my mom got remarried, too. And so, you know, I had a stepdad as well. And, you know, he was kind of similar to my dad. You know what I mean? I think the biggest difference is he didn't want to step on no toes. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's like, I'm going to play the stepdad role for sure. Yeah. But he did a lot of, I guess, kind of facilitating manhood in a sense where it's like, I'm going to try to help you get, you know, get some of these tools, but ultimately it's on you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think the pressure there is like, you know, you don't want to disappoint those guys. Right.
Like,
you know what I mean? So it's like, you know, between my dad and stepdad and, you know, I got uncles and things like that where, you know, I'm trying to find a way to say this without sounding a certain way, but you know, on my mom's side, I was kind of like the only boy.
Okay. Okay.
And so that pressure.
Yeah. Okay.
From, like uncles and things like that, where it was kind of like, you almost feel kind of, and I hope I don't sound away, but like, feel like almost like a golden child. You know what I'm saying?
I gotcha. No, I gotcha.
Where it's
like,
you know what I mean? You the only boy.
Yeah.
As well as, you know, I had some uncles who made some different choices along the way to where it landed them in places. So they did some things that kind of, you know what I mean? And so, you know, my mom was on me tough. My sister was on me tough. My uncles and them, all of them were on me tough. And so I think they almost kind of looked at me as like, you got to be the one.
You got to be the one. Yeah.
And then on my dad's side, you know, I had a whole bunch of uncles, my daddy, and then I got a whole bunch of male cousins.
Yeah.
And so then there was the pressure of, you know, I'm watching older cousins excel in sports, do certain things, you know. And then I was almost kind of like the baby boy for a while on that side of the family. And so it was kind of one of those things, man, like growing up watching them do certain things, get jobs and get girlfriends and doing all these things, like the pressure to like make it happen was heightened on that end too.
Yeah, man.
And so it was just kind of one of those things, man, where it's like, you know, you feel like there's no room for error, right? Like you don't want to mess up. You don't want to look like you don't have it together.
Right.
And so, you know, I will say the positive in it all is that I felt the pressure to at least try to do good.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? The pressure to try to do certain things and stuff. But like I said, I think that's where I realized, you know, getting older is like some of the feelings that I felt during those times, though, were unhealthy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The anxiety, the worrying about, you know, dang, what am I going to look like when I go there? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I'm going to hang with my cousins this summer.
Yeah.
You know, I got to have it together. I need to talk about what I did during my basketball season. Like, I need to have, like, you know what I mean?
And
like,
the competition of it all,
Bro, my God.
I mean, it was always a contest, a competition. Like, man. And it didn't even have to be serious, but it was always like a competition.
Can you do a backflip on trampoline? You know what I mean?
Like, right. For real, man. Like, and if we were wrestling to see who gonna win, we was shooting ball to see who gonna shoot the best. You know, but it was always the competition of it all. And to your point, man, that unspoken pressure, like thinking about over time psychologically how that resonated with us over time, you know. And right. even I could think about my uncles, man. Like they were never hard on me, but I can remember moments and times, Melvin, when they would tell me to do certain things because they felt like I needed to kind of, you know, tighten up. You know what I'm saying? They would tell, and so that pressure alone, because men, like having that man that's like had to have the expectation on you, man, that was big.
Right.
That was big. So with them looking at me like, right, we need to do this, you need to do that, you need to do this. And even like, and I love cars, you know, and I got an uncle named Peanut. He was the mechanic, and just me to just know certain things about cars. Mm-hmm. Like I had to do that. I mean, when I was changing my oil on my first car, you know what I'm saying? And I needed to know how to do that. And so to your point, just that silent expectation of manhood, because and it goes back, right? It goes back like generationally, you know, to know that, you know, the things that our forefathers went through, the things that they had to endure, like over time, like that blood is still in us.
Oh yeah.
And so it's just kind of multiplied through the generation. How do you and I know this is kind of off script, but I'm thinking about Corbin. How do you, like, with this thing right here, how do you navigate that with your son? That's my boy Corbin, y'all. How do you navigate this with Corbin, man?
That has been probably one of the hardest jobs, you know what I'm saying, that I've had. And the crazy thing is I always get emotional when I talk about my kids, but
I know.
But
I've seen you get emotional talking about your kids.
So I keep it together. But but yeah, like that's been my hardest job. You know what I mean? Like just because, like I said before, like I think there's a positive, healthy pressure that comes along with you know, growing up, like I think it, and I hate to, I guess, reinforce, I guess, a I don't know, a stigma or something like that in our community. But like, you are a black boy.
You are.
You are a black boy. No matter how light skinned you are.
Right. You're a black boy. You're a black boy for real.
You're a black boy. So it's like there's certain things that I'm on him tough about. Mm-hmm. Just based on personal experience. Based on what I feel like the world's gonna give or take away from him. And so, but on the same, at the same time, I'm trying to balance, like, his life is his life to live. You know what I mean? And that's the hard part, because it's like, as a parent, it is somewhat my responsibility to shape your life to a certain degree, while leaving room for you to explore who you are. And so, you know, I try not to add too much pressure, while at the same time, I feel like the pressure is necessary. Like you got to know it ain't going to always be me there to do this.
Right.
You got to know that, hey, look, you know, and I tell him, and I use a lot of sports analogies with him because he likes playing everything. And so I often tell him, like, you got to be coachable.
Right.
But at the same time, I got to trust that you're going to do something when you're out there.
Right.
So, you know, he's playing soccer right now. And so, you know, we record a lot of him playing and things like that. And so I try to explain to him, like, hey, like right here, you're standing and doing nothing. Standing and doing nothing, but you want the ball given to you.
Man, that's a good lesson, man. Wow.
You know what I mean? Wow. So it's like, if you standing and doing nothing, but you want the ball, ain't nobody passing it to you. They trying to score too.
Right.
So you can either start running, get yourself in position to where they can pass it to you and you score, or you can go take the ball as well and take control of this game and go score yourself.
Coach Dad.
You know what I mean? So it's like I try to use those analogies because I feel like they help him in other aspects of his life, right? Like you can be moving and somebody can throw you an alley-oop. You know what I mean? So that means if you want to be a pilot, we doing good in math. We doing good in science. I got a friend whose parent was an air traffic controller. He knows pilots. He knows all this stuff. There go your alley-oop. Or, hey, look, MTSU has a airspace, whatever
Man,
you can do it on your own. You go to school. You work your way there. Or we can throw you an alley-oop. But you got to be moving. You can't stand still and do it. And so, you know, it's a little pressure on him, but at the same time, I feel like it's healthy pressure. You know what I mean?
I'm going to use that with the boys and him, bro. Like that was really good how you just laid that out,
because,
man.
You know, sometimes he gets caught up in standing and watching.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my thing with him constantly. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it happens. And I think sometimes it's because it's the love of, like, watching the game in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Which is not a bad thing. But I told him, but you actually out there playing, though.
Yeah.
It'd be different if we were all on sideline.
Right.
But
you
out there
in the game.
In the game,
yeah.
And you got to move one way or another. You know what I mean? And so, you know, I try to add that, but also I realize he's in a different age. He's not like how we grew up, right?
No, not at all.
We constantly were competing, you know what I mean? Whether that was in the neighborhood or with your cousins or whatever it is. And so I think what they take as – encouragement or motivation doesn't come the same way we received it.
Yeah.
You know, we could get hollered at.
Yeah.
We could get punched in the chest.
Yeah.
We get popped in the back of the head, and then we're going to go out there and we gonna tear them up.
Right.
They're
different. Yeah.
They turn off. They get into their feelings. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so I think balancing that always is my hardest job, honestly. Like, I'm trying to find that balance.
And I think that even thinking about Corbin and then just his generation, Melvin, I think that they are more emotionally available than we were.
Oh,
they're much more emotionally available. I'm seeing that. And not only that, I see how even when it comes down to Corbin wanting certain haircuts, you know, you give him the agency to make decisions. But you're like, okay, this time is cool, but next time you cutting it off. Or if you don't do this time, you know what I'm saying? And I see you giving him that leeway versus, you know, most of us got, you getting your hair like this.
Right.
Ain't no question. Who paying for this haircut?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Ball fade, take it all the way down. He ain't coming for another 3 weeks.
Right. but you giving him that agency, I think is good. That builds the foundation of them being able to speak up for what they want versus internalizing, like, okay, when I feel something, I'm going to hold it in.
Yeah.
And I'm going to feel bad, but I'm not going to tell you I feel bad because I know I'm going to get slapped in the face. You know what I'm saying?
That kicks our butt.
Absolutely.
Man, me and Chastity, he'll say something in the car.
Uh-huh.
Or he'll pull us to the side and explain something.
Uh-huh.
And we'll be like, oh, like, how do we even deal with this? Just because it's kind of one of those things, man, where it's like, like you said, we weren't allowed to be so emotionally available.
Right.
Or to express ourselves. Like, their level of emotional intelligence, man, now is through the roof. And so, you know, it catches us off guard because it's feelings that we learned to express at like 20-some, 30-some years old that he's saying at 9. And we kind of be like, how do I say this to him without feeling like I'm going too deep? But honestly, it's like, the fact that he brought it up, he might be ready for the conversation.
Right. And bro, emotional availability was a lot of times disrespect. It was disrespect. And so if me being emotional or expressing my emotions meant that I'm disrespecting my mom, I'm just going to hold it.
Mm-hmm.
And so imagine, again, psychologically going through time, like in relationships, you know what I'm saying? Me showing up emotionally, I automatically, my body feels that, okay, I'm being disrespectful, so I'm just going to keep it to myself until I blow up in me and I ain't got a choice but to, you know, so, man, bro, like, this is heavy. This is all heavy. And with all the mental health talk, Melvin, that exists now, do you think that there's still stigma around vulnerability for men in our community?
I guess I wouldn't say stigma as much as it is. I put it this way. I think we broke the stigma to a certain degree because you almost can't turn on anything now
without
hearing about it one way or another. Yeah. I think there's still a certain level of shame maybe around it. I think there's still some apprehension. You know what I mean, amongst us when it comes to it. I don't think there's necessarily still a stigma because, you know, I you're starting to see black men as mental health professionals too now.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I think that's opened the door to be like, hey, look, there's somebody that I might be able to connect with that, you know what I mean? Like, my therapist, he's a black man. And it's funny because, you know, I get it and I catch myself, man. And we saying and I'm saying stuff to where the conversations we're having are one of those things where it's like, it's almost like I'm talking to a friend of mine, you know what I mean? Family member or something like that. So I think the stigma has been broken, but I do think there's still a level of apprehension, a little shame behind it.
We're trying to find our place in it. And I think that's the fear. And I think I hear a lot of men be defensive about all of this stuff. And they're like, man, they trying to like water us down. They trying to like, it's an attack on manhood. No, I will say it's not an attack on manhood, but I think it's a real thing with men finding our place and vulnerability, finding our place and knowing how to navigate in front of other men.
Right. You know? And I think what you'll find out is that when you start focusing on your mental health and on top of that, maybe even seeking therapy or something, man, I've had my therapist tell me about something where it was bro, you good. Like, ground yourself, move on. Mm-hmm. Like, and you might not need to come back for a little while. Like, you know what I mean? You straight. Right. And I think, you know, if we pay attention to our mental health, we show up as better men.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like I read his last name's Wilson, but Jason Wilson. Jason,
yeah.
Battle Cry.
I saw him last weekend.
I read the Battle Cry book, man, and it was just kind of talking about being like I forgot the word to use exactly, but just kind of like being like a whole man, right?
Yes.
Like understanding that it's more than just being a provider or being strong or being tough, but there's a certain level of vulnerability, certain level of emotions and stuff that you show, man, that truly make you a better man. You know, like I think we can get caught in our own heads, like we were talking about earlier, and I'll shut the world off, man, being in my own head.
Absolutely.
And not finding a way to deal with my mental health to where I can still show up for everybody else around me, because like you said, man, I got to do it for them. That's what they waiting on.
You got to do it, right? That's what they waiting on.
That's what they waiting on.
And when we're stuck in our head, you know, all kind of things come up and thoughts come up, and it's like, it's not real. It's not real. And we oftentimes, we react off of the thoughts that's coming up for us when we are not expressing ourselves. That's why any ship that I'm in, any ship now, Melvin, I'm in, but it has to be conducive for me to be honest. If I cannot be honest, if I cannot express myself within reason, man, it's dangerous for me.
Right.
It's dangerous. I don't want to go back to that place of hiding. I don't want to go back to that place of holding my feelings in. And so that's why I'm so expressive, even with the boys in the organization, man, express yourself, man.
Right.
And just me having this conversation with you, bro, I'm thinking about, man, just the lack thereof with expression for us, because we're afraid to. Right. And now we love our mamas. We love our mamas and our dads, you know, and just that I understand where they came from. And so they just gave us what they had. Mm-hmm. And so now I think it's important for us to really begin to be even more intentional about the kids that we're bringing up,
right,
and the kids that's coming up behind us, giving them the agency to speak. Because a lot of times I didn't ask for help because I internalized that, Raymond, you a man,
right,
and you got to get this done by yourself because you're a boy and you got to get it done. And, you know, even in my house, I was the baby, you know, and my sister didn't like, my mama, I always do for you. But a lot of times I did not speak up for my needs because I felt like you just gotta have to.
Man, I mean, same boat, you know. And then for me, you know, having two kids, you know, that I think that's one thing that, like I said, that's one of our hardest hurdles to overcome as parents, man. Like it's been leaving that room because, like you said, you feel challenged sometimes, as well as sometimes you don't feel prepared to talk about what they bring up.
Right.
Ooh. And so I can only imagine,
man,
you know, our parents and what they didn't have before them, because, you know, I think progressively, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We've gotten better and better about addressing those things. And so, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, my mom and dad, they rural Arkansas, so it's parents work. My grandma drove the bus, taught at the school, and you know, my mom's mom, like, so she was working all the time, had five kids, doing it on her own sometimes. Like, it was kind of one of those things where it was like, man, like, I don't got time to deal with whatever it is you're dealing with. Gone on away from me with that, to where then my mom is dealing with, you know, her two kids and trying to figure out how to address our needs and the emotions that we're having, and trying her best, you know what I mean, in order to talk us through what whatever it is we're feeling while dealing with her own trauma.
Dealing with her own stuff,
what's going on. And so now, you know, it's like the next step. You know, we've tried to make ourselves very available to our kids, because one thing that we always said is that we want them to be able to speak for themselves.
Yes.
And so we push that a lot. You know, say it.
Yes.
Because, you know, Corbin's now gotten to the age where he'll kind of try to, never mind. And it's like, no, say it. You're not going to get in trouble.
Right.
You know, now, and the younger one, you know, she Morgan, she just watch him do it. So she ain't got no filter. Like, she come all, man, she come all the way out from the jump.
From the jump.
And it's hard for us sometimes, but, you know, that's what we're trying to build in them. You know what I mean? Like, you say what you want, or you say how you feel, the rest of us will learn how to deal with it. Yeah. We'll learn how to deal with it.
And you're actually all in the next question with the family dynamic, because I can, as I hear you talk, I think about my lived experience and how we paid attention to what our mom and them didn't say. Mm-hmm. We paid attention to what dad and them didn't say. And so it was an unspoken, like, just got to do it. You got to do it. And even the kids, I know even now they pay attention to what we don't say.
Right.
You know, and so to your point, I think that it's just important that they can express themselves. And for in our shoes, brothers our age, if you're anywhere between the mid-30s, early 40s, if you're in that range, like being able to express yourself, man, y'all, we are dying. We are dying from stress. We're dying from blood pressure. We're dying because half us ain't going to the doctor. And then by the time we go, we go into the emergency room when it's already too bad, you know. And so holding all that stuff in, brothers, because we have to admit that, and it's hard, Melvin, that I don't have it all together.
Right.
And I don't have all the answers. And It's something that I'm realizing now, Mel, that it's hard for humans to say, I don't know.
Man.
It's hard for us to say, especially as a man, I don't know. Like even something as simple as us being in a car and having to put our address in a GPS and versus not having to put it in. You don't want to say, you don't want to be like, ah, man, you don't know the rest. You don't know how to get there, Brian. Nah, man, you got to hit 20 and go down 30.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right,
and that's why. In your opinion, why do you think it's difficult for us to say I don't know? I need help. I don't know.
I think it's social pressure, right? Like, or like societal norms. Mm-hmm. You know, like as a husband, as a father, I'm supposed to know, and I'm supposed to figure it out before somebody even asks me. Whatever the question or whatever it is that's coming up. And so I think you also have kind of that internal pressure, you know what I mean? Where it's just kind of like, I want to be the best at what I do. And I want to feel like I got it all together. And so there's a certain level, and I think I said it before, I think there's a certain level of shame that comes along with asking for help. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, hey, can you show me where, you know what I mean? Like, you almost kind of, and I think I talked to you about it at the shop a little bit. So, like, earlier this year, I got my broker's license, and then, you know, and then in the office became a managing broker. And
I hit my boy up.
Yeah, man. I'm your guy. So,
your guy. Yes,
so, you know, with moving into that role, nobody lays out for you how this is supposed to go.
Right.
You know, and so I was kind of put in a position where it was like I'm kind of trying to learn on the fly. And so being an educator before, it was kind of, you know, handling team meetings were, you know, kind of almost, I set it up as almost like I was teaching a lesson to to a class, you know what I mean? But ultimately, teaching adults is a little different, you know what I mean? Different. I'm there because, you know, I have the option to be here. School kids, they don't have an option of whether or not they're going to be there, so they're going to learn whatever you're teaching that day. Whereas adults come across a different way. And so, you know, I feel like at some point I kind of hit a wall, you know, with trying to do it like I was doing it as a teacher. And so I think I was telling you I reached out to a, another kind of known broker around town and hit her up. And it took everything
in, you.
In me, man, to form that text message just to get her opinion on, like, how can I end the year with, like, team meets. It seems so simple.
Yeah.
But to make myself vulnerable enough to be like, I ain't got it. Like, I don't know what I'm doing here. And even earlier in the year, she met with me, and I just kind of asked her some questions because it's like, you know, hey, I'm out here. I need a little help. And so, you know, I think the greatest part of it, of all of that, was how willing she was to lend the help. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I was hurting my own self by being too afraid to even ask.
To even ask, man.
And so, like, you know, I be real. When I initially sent it out, it was a minute before she responded. Oh, my God. Anxiety was through the roof.
Wow.
And you know what I mean? Because I was like, it's like, man, it's like, man, she think I don't know nothing. They probably thinking I'm terrible at what I do, blah, blah, blah. And, man, and so it was kind of, you know, anxiety set in. So now I'm snowballing, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then phone ring. She actually picked up the phone and called me rather than responding in the text. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And it was just kind of like, oh, here's some things that, you know, and it's stuff like that, man, where it's like, that's where mental health is important.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Right there.
Where it's like, hey, like, you know, I'm about to let anxiety get the best of me because somebody didn't respond to my attempt to ask for help within an hour.
Man.
You get what I'm saying? And so I think that's, and people won't admit that, but I also think that that's the issue people have with asking for help. You know what I mean? It's like you're scared that people won't take your request and help you do whatever it is you do. But what I found out is there's more people willing to help than those that aren't.
And to your point also, man, like I'm getting on somebody's nerves. I don't want to bother you because you got your own subject.
Yeah.
People are willing to help.
Right.
People are willing to help us, man. Right. And when we get over that mountain and For the viewers and the listeners, like what is that mountain made up for you? Like what is that mountain made of? Like that you don't want to ask anybody for help and you thinking of all the thoughts in the world why you don't want to ask. What is that made up of?
Man.
Gosh.
it could be past trauma.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like, you know, not feeling heard. Or going to the people that's supposed to help you and they hurt you instead.
You
know what I mean? And honestly, it may not even be that the person did it intentionally as much as it is how you felt by your response to, you know, you mean their response to your ask for help. You know what I mean? And so I think that just continues to stack and build over time, right?
Yes.
To where now you have this huge mountain in front of you.
Yes.
Where you like, I don't even know if I want to climb this mountain to ask for help because I don't know if I can take, you know, somebody taking my vulnerability and using it against me. Somebody maybe hearing me ask for help and then going to talk to somebody else about what I asked them about, or you know what I mean? Like
go tell my business.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And we, you know, black folks, we about that bit, you know what I mean? Don't be telling my business whatever.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And so, you know, I think that's honestly for me, I'll even say it for me, you know, I think that's just kind of what it is sometimes, where it's just kind of like, you know, in moments where I've asked for help and felt like somebody didn't take it seriously, or maybe being vulnerable as far as asking for help, and then somebody using that to talk to somebody else about me or something like that. Yeah. You know what I mean? So,
and when I can recall times where, bro, I was the king of spiritual bypassing. Mm-hmm. I was the king of, you know, of just finding some kind of religious quote to use on myself to say, okay, I'm good, but I'm bypassing what I'm feeling. And so that, and not being heard, Melvin, I had a monster on the inside of me that I would revert to internally, and it was devious. You know what I'm saying? And I know that took me back to childhood. When you don't get your way, when you feel like you're not heard, you're gonna do something to be seen or do. And so that was something that I dealt with heavy in therapy, like, because I learned I could not spiritual bypass, and I had to put myself in a position to where I express what it is I'm feeling, and not like internalizing because I feel like I'm not heard, man.
Yeah, that's big,
man. That was big. So Mel, when finish this sentence. All
right.
The last time I had to ask for help, it made me feel.
Oh. Kind of small. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like, I felt, and it was the situation I was talking about earlier, but I felt kind of small because I felt like, based on title, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The expectation is that you're, like, big guy, big things, you got it all together, you're the one running the show. Mm-hmm. So when I asked for help, it took me back to a place where I felt like, I was down here, you know what I mean? And, you know, I did, like I said, it took me some time to even build up to ask, you know what I'm saying? And so, you know, you try to get past it, you know, and I think even to this day, like, even when it comes to being married, you know what I mean? Finishing that sentence, sometimes it's still feels the same way. Like, you almost revert back to being a kid sometimes.
You know,
like, you know, me and my wife, you know, we've been together forever.
Yes.
And, you know, we've gone through different phases and stuff in our lives where it's like either or, one or the other, we've had to be in positions to where we had to help each other, right? Mm-hmm. Complement each other in different spaces or supplement each other. And so I think sometimes even in with her, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. When I get to a point to where it's like, hey, you know, I need some help with this. There's even times where I still almost feel like a kid, like, you know what I mean? Asking for help, you know, but, man, like I said, like in that last situation, it's just once you finally say it, you know what I mean?
Man, the relief.
And knowing too that, bro, there's more people out there willing to help you than there are those that's going to hurt you. And once I get past that point of just asking and opening up my mouth and saying what I need, man, it feels like the relief, the monkey's off my back, the pressure's off my chest, and now I'm in a place where I'm trying to receive it. Yeah.
So let's define small as a man. What does small mean to us? Is it a level of exposure that I'm not comfortable with, or is it I'm not as good as, or is it kind of like a mix to you in your, your mindset?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know what I mean? Like I think, like I said, I think I feel like I'm in several roles where I feel like I'm supposed to have
supposed
it together.
To have it. Yeah.
I'm supposed to know.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. And so when asking for help, it's some exposure into what I'm thinking, what I'm going through, and at the same time, you know what I mean? Like, at the same time, I think it's also kind of like I said, it almost feels childlike.
Yes.
When you're supposed to be the big man in all of these roles, it sometimes it feels childlike. Like, I feel sometimes like a boy asking for help. Yeah. And it's funny because it's not even in like some real traumatic way as much as it is like a simple feeling of like, let me ask my mama, or like, let me ask, like, you want to do something, you want to go somewhere, or you don't know, like, I need help on this math problem. Like, sometimes when it, when you get to that point of asking, sometimes that's what it almost reverts back to. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, man, it, I think it's a combination of the two. Where
I agree. I definitely agree. It's definitely a combination of the two. And the breakthrough is in asking.
That's it.
That's the breakthrough. When I'm willing to put myself up front and say, I don't have it.
Yep.
I ain't got it. You know what I'm saying? I ain't got the energy for it. Yeah. I ain't got the energy to do it. I ain't got the energy to take you. I ain't got the energy. I don't even have the money to do it. Like, it's so, that's where
a whole nother.
A lot of times, Melvin, that's where I see the breakthrough to get to the other side, because we don't get what we need if we don't ask.
Yeah.
If we don't say it, if we don't get what we need. And taking it all in, and I know this is really helping somebody. I feel it's going to help somebody, Melvin. It's going to help a man who are standing in the shoes, in the role of always having to have it, always having to do it, always having to, feeling like I always got to be the one to make it happen. Bro, it's okay to say, I don't have it.
Man. And it definitely gets to that place where it's like, I don't have it, right? But also I think there's little steps and little things along the way where we can step in before that point.
We
tend to not do.
Yes.
You know what I mean? In that attempt to try to figure it all out on our own. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I'm trying to get better at. You know what I mean? I feel like for so long I've waited till I've gotten to that point, right? Yeah. Where it's like, I don't have it, whether it be, you know, mentally, physically, whether it's financially or spiritually. I typically or I have over my life gotten to a point to where I felt like I was depleted.
Man.
Before I asked for help.
Man.
Rather than seeing the signs of needing help.
Mm-hmm.
And stepping in at the sign of it,
mm-hmm.
and kind of going ahead and trying to cross that threshold of just asking. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So, you know, that would be my encouragement. Like, we've been there. We've seen the signs of knowing that we're headed to a place that we're going to be where it's like, I ain't got it.
Man, yeah, we see it.
And, you know, I don't know if it's pride, ego, whatever it may be that may be stopping us from asking ahead of time, you know what I mean? But I think that's where maybe as men, we got to get better at is, let's not wait until it's too late to ask for help.
Yes. I can remember, and this is a place of vulnerability for me. I can remember when I was maybe in my early 20s, maybe 24, 25, I was afraid to ask for help financially.
Yes.
And so I used to work at a shop on Elvis Presley, and I've always been able to take care of myself financially with being a barber. But at the time, I really needed some extra help. And so instead of me asking somebody, I went to a check in the cash place, maybe like less than a mile from the shop. When I went to the check in the cash place, and I think I borrowed maybe like $250 or something.
Oh, wow.
I got caught in the cycle of going back to rewrite the check every 2 weeks. And it got to the point I was so embarrassed.
Yeah.
And I was so ashamed to go to the check in the cash place. And I was so, I would find myself almost hiding when I go up to try to park my car on the second. I didn't want to.
Yeah.
And all that, because I was internalizing just asking somebody for some help, man. Yep. And I finally got to a place to where I had to get myself out of that rut. Like, Raymond, you cannot keep doing this.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I had to shift some things. But the place that I went to financially, like writing those checks, you know, paying 200% in interest on that, man, because I just didn't want to ask somebody for some help, man.
Yep.
because I wanted to keep up an appearance as if I had it like that. Oh my God. And that's another piece for another show, man. Right, keeping up appearances for our peers.
That ego and pride is something else, man. Something else.
Man.
And it gets the best of all of us. I don't care. Yes. I don't care what you say.
Right.
Every last one of us, that ego and pride has made us make some bad decisions in our lives.
Man.
One way or another.
Yes, man. Man. Woo, man.
I know, right?
This was a lot, and I appreciate you for coming on, man. And I want to ask you, man, because this is Ray Bridging Humans, the place where, you know, we're bridging communities. If there was one thing that you could do, thinking about all of the pieces of our community, all of the different sectors of our community, if it was one thing you could do that could bridge humans better, what would that one thing be?
Ooh, that's tough.
I know I snuck that in.
Yeah, nah, you good. I think a lot of us have some very good ideas. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us have a lot of good resources, mm-hmm, and things like that. And I think we've even had a conversation like this in the shop before, but I feel like sometimes we do feel like we got to do it alone.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Or we're doing it by ourselves. And I honestly wish that, especially in our community here in Memphis, that more of us would be willing to collaborate.
Yeah.
Right? Or bring us together. So if it was something where I could find a way to share resources, right? Yes. Let's do something like this together. Like, and you know, and I have to look up the stats, but you know, they were saying like per capita, like Memphis has like the most nonprofits.
Yes.
And it's like there's so many people doing the same things.
Yes.
To where it's like, man, if we could decide to do some of this stuff together,
right,
the amount of people we could reach,
right,
the amount of people that'd be helped, mm-hmm, rather than you doing this alone, then not wanting to ask for help.
Right.
You
right.
know what I'm saying?
Real talk.
Tapping out your own resources, mm-hmm, although you got them.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that goes across different sectors too, mm-hmm, right? Like, mm-hmm, you know, like I'm so happy that, you know, I've began to develop some relationships and things like that over the years with different realtors and brokers and things like that, to where it's like I can tap into some of them and you know, and share those resources. And, you know, I ran into another broker out at Tanger, and he was just like, hey, man, if there's anything you need, like, hit me up, man. I'm available for real. And it was just kind of like, that's kind of what I'm getting at, right? Like, mm-hmm, just more collaboration, yes, where it's like, we don't all have to be the one.
See where you're going.
Being the one.
The one, right.
We can do some things together, man, and yes, make this thing really pop and help a lot of people achieve whatever goals it may be.
Yes.
So if it was one thing, man, it would be just to kind of try to find a way to bridge more people, man,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
to where we can, yeah, really collaborate, and I think that we all out here on
that.
Our own.
And I haven't even made, thank you for your answer too, man. But I haven't, yeah, even made it public that I retired my real estate license. And I remember when I did it, I called you.
I
hit you up, and I know that was an emotional thing for me. And because I was just so used to,
yeah,
your point, always just doing it. But I realized the journey that I'm going down now, I had to sit it down.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And you were one of the ones I call, like anybody who I have sold houses to, like, I'm sending them to Melvin. Yeah. Anybody who is in the market for buying a home, if you come to me, I'm gonna send you to my guy. And that's just how
I appreciate
how much I think of you, how much, yeah, I believe in the man in you, the God in you. You are an integral man. You are a guy who I know that you gonna do the best for people, you know. And so yeah, man, absolutely, man. So yeah. This has been a great conversation, man. And yeah. it brought up some things in me. I'm like, dang, man. And I think a lot, Melvin, about what things do to us as men psychologically over time. Like
right.
that's what I deal with heavy now when yeah. I think about it, man, issues and issues that men have to deal with. And I think a lot of times when people are giving answers mm-hmm. and when people are trying to help, you know, it's like in their sometimes not all the time, sometimes in their head it's like, okay, I'm giving you the answer. Why you ain't getting it?
Right.
Not knowing that psychologically, I'm fighting from all the trauma that I've gone through the years trying to get to where you're saying. So
right.
it's not that simple to just give an answer sometimes and not be willing to take it all in. That's why collaboration.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said that, man.
Yeah,
so,
man.
But thank y'all so much for watching. You're a black man watching this. Please like and subscribe to the channel. Ray Bridging Humans. I mean, if I want you to shout your on social media out as well, man.
Yeah, man. So it's Melvin Guy with Reed Realtors. 901-451-9282 is the phone number. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, I'm on LinkedIn as well. I tell people all the time, you know, real estate for me is more than transactions, right? Like it's about helping people achieve their goals while learning along the way. You know, so whether you're looking to sell or buy, I'm your guy. I'll let me.
Yes. This has been another episode of Ray Bridging Humans, the place where the people get to hear you and the world get to see it. Love your family. Till next week. Peace.